Good morning. Welcome to the roundtable and our panel discussion for this Tuesday, the 27th of November. I'm Joe Donahue. Now, I know that all of our panel members are here. I just don't know where they are in the building. Last I knew, I think there was a little confab going on. They'll get here eventually. Gives me an opportunity to remind you that today is Giving Tuesday. And of course, if you've looked in your email, everybody's asking for money. And we're going to do it too. All you have to do is go to WAMC.org and we would love to have you help us out. And if we are one of your favorite nonprofits, you can certainly keep us in your thoughts and prayers today. Good morning, all. Our panelists have streamed in, and we're thrilled to see you all. Let me introduce everybody, and we'll get to it. J.P. Miller is here from the Empire Report. Good morning. How are you?
Good morning. Happy Giving Tuesday, Joe.
Yes, Happy Giving Tuesday to you. Very nice. Mike Spain. The joke we made yesterday, Mike, was about, we're here in nonprofits, and then we were saying, newspapers might as well be a nonprofit, right? I mean...
Some would argue that they should follow the model of public radio and
yes.
be a publicly funded entity, but we don't really want to copy WAMC. We like being a for-profit corporation.
Well, you stick with it.
Okay.
All right. Mike Spain is the associate editor of the Times Union. Good morning, sir. How are you?
Morning.
Nice to have you here as always. We are also thrilled to have the New York Press Association's Judy Patrick with us. Good morning, Judy.
Good morning.
Very nice to have you here.
A lot of snow up there in Washington County this morning.
It was.
Wasn't
it was
there?
Coming down off the hill was tough, wasn't it?
It was.
But we're here. All's good. Alan, you made it away out of the holler as well.
That was awful this morning. You know, when I was a young man,
the snow was probably much deeper then.
No,
too.
But when I was a young man, I used to
and in black and white.
I used to drive from New York City to Binghamton to visit a lady, and young lady, and I would go through, the snow on Route 17 and deposit in Hancock. You know, remember those places? Yeah. So what ended up happening was there were some terrible, terrible nights, awful. Of snow, but today coming in from Great Barrington to Albany was the worst I have ever seen.
That's pretty profound.
You got your studded snow tires on yet, or what?
I don't.
Do they make those for a Prius?
They make. That is a very interesting issue. For the first time ever, I decided not to get snow tires, four snow tires for my Prius. I said I'm going to live with the all weathers and see what happens. This morning, I was cursing myself.
Lesson learned.
Yes. That's true, Judy. You're always profound with those insights.
I think we're ready to start the show. Good morning, all. We welcome your letters, panel at WAMC.org, panel at WAMC.org. Let us get started. We begin with the story out of Washington where, and I know... Sit down, Mike. I know you may find this as a shock, but Paul Manafort lied.
Really?
Yeah, I know. Paul Manafort breaches plea deal by repeatedly lying, according to Robert Mueller, the special counsel. Paul Manafort, President Trump's former campaign chairman, repeatedly lied to federal investigators in breach of a plea agreement he signed 2 months ago, according to the special counsel's office in a court filing late Monday. Prosecutors working for the special counsel, Robert Mueller, said Mr. Manafort's crimes and lies about a variety of subjects relieve them of all promises that they made him in the plea agreement. But under the terms of the agreement, Mr. Manafort cannot withdraw his guilty plea. So he made a promise to them and said, okay, we'll broker this deal with you if you tell us what we need to know. And then he lied to them, which they can prove. And now he has breached the deal, and they have gone to court. Defense lawyers disagreed that Mr. Manafort had violated the deal. In the same filing, they said Mr. Manafort had met repeatedly with the special counsel's office and believes he had provided truthful information. But given the impasse between the two sides, they asked Judge Amy Berman Jackson of U.S. District Court for the District of Columbia to set a sentencing date for Mr. Manafort, who has been in solitary confinement in a detention center in Alexandria, Virginia. The 11th hour development in Minister Manafort's case is a fresh sign of the special counsel's aggressive approach in investigating Russia's interference in the 2016 presidential election and whether anyone in the Trump campaign knew about or assisted Moscow's effort.
Rose Garden.
Rose Garden.
I never promised you.
That's right. Well, there's two ways to interpret this. One would be that Manafort is by not cooperating now with the special prosecutor, it's going to hurt the special prosecutor's case against President Trump potentially if he has one, or it could be that they have so much information that they could tell Manafort wasn't telling the truth, and that the president ought to be worried.
By the way, I'm serious. I do think that the word has reached Manafort. Keep your mouth shut, and you're going to get a pardon. Whether he believes that or not, I don't know. But I am sure that that's what this is all about.
Well, in the very, very most then he would spend in prison would be 6 years, because that's when Trump would end his second term if he survives his first term and then gets reelected.
Why is that?
Because that's 2018. It would be 2024 at the end of Trump's term. So Manafort would get the pardon at the end of Trump's
presidency. Oh, I see. We get the pardon at the end. Not
maybe
now.
Sooner. Maybe sooner. Maybe after he's reelected. Position. I don't know.
Yeah. You know, it does ruin Manafort as a witness, though, because the prosecutor's going to court saying this guy's a liar. So he is not a good witness for Mueller going forward. I think Mueller doesn't need him. The other thing I'm hearing is that Manafort doesn't like where he's being held now. He wants to get transferred to a federal penitentiary, which is much nicer than the local
club,
place. Where
club fed.
he's headed there. But yeah, he's ruined as a witness.
It's also hard if you're Mueller and you're in charge of interviewing all of these liars and thieves that worked for Trump, trying to figure out who's lying, who's telling the truth, and what evidence do they have to back up their different claims. And Manafort, for him to first make tens of millions of dollars and not pay taxes on tens of millions of dollars, that's a really dumb move.
That's
could you imagine
really
making all that money and not paying taxes on it? And then you're getting interviewed by Bob Mueller, one of the smartest prosecutor law guys in the world, and you're going to lie to the guy? It's just crazy how dumb this guy is.
Well, it may be dumb, maybe a little crazy, too, right? I mean, some of these guys are really, they're not in touch with reality. But one thing I can tell you is the man is 69 years old.
He's facing a prison term.
So let's assume he doesn't cooperate and the judge lays 10 years on him. That means he's going to die in prison probably.
No, not necessarily. I have another scenario here. And that is that President Trump leaves office at the end of his first term, either by the decision of the electorate or he decides not to run for re-election. And in that lame duck period near the end of his last term, which hopefully would be 2020, he does it then.
You know, or he might just do it in January.
He could just do it, yeah.
I agree, Mike. I think he could just do it. He's got that kind of cojones issue.
Yeah, I mean, I think that there's a lot of bravado in people like Manafort, just to your point, JP, that makes them think they can be above the law and they don't have to be accountable.
That's
right. Why should I have to pay taxes on money that a foreign government pays me? I mean, you know, it just seems ridiculous.
Yeah. No, I think he's waiting for a pardon.
Well, but this may go on to my, you know, he's not smart claim, which is if you're going to depend, you're going to go to jail and you're going to put your whole life on a promise from Donald Trump that you're getting a pardon, that would be the highest stupid thing that he's
ever
done.
That's a very good point.
On the other hand, yeah, but Trump is – the one thing that Trump seems to do is he likes loyalty. And that's why he got rid of Jeff Sessions.
And he loves to give it too, right? Yeah. Like with the black Republican congressional – woman congressional candidate, and he got on her case because she wasn't loyal enough, and that's why she lost.
Yeah.
It's unbelievable.
Until he doesn't, though. Michael Cohen, Michael Cohen's office was three doors down from Donald Trump's office in Trump Tower for 10 years. Yeah, and he was a hatchet man for 10 years, and he is loyal until he's not, until it doesn't benefit him. And if pardoning Manafort doesn't benefit Donald Trump, he's not going to pardon him. And I don't. For Manafort to rely on that or think that that's going to happen because of some promise or some indication is a fool's errand.
Well, JP, I have great, as you know, JP, I have great respect for you, but I don't agree with you at all.
Well, to Judy's point,
this guy, I think What, Mike? I'm sorry.
I was going to say, to Judy's point, he's a tainted witness now. His testimony won't be useful against the president, and that alone may earn him the pardon that he
seeks. I think they want it, and that's why they're coming down heavy on him.
What's that?
Well, let's not forget the fact that this guy's always been a snake.
Well, he's got
exactly.
a sorted
and that's what we call it.
What did you say?
He has a sorted past. Yes.
That's what I mean, he
but he wears great suits.
Yeah. Well, yeah, but he needs a better dye job with the go of the suit. But anyway, it just seems that if, you know, nobody ever thought this guy was an upstanding citizen to begin with, then when he became the chairman, I mean it never seemed like a good idea, right?
Mm. That was bold to name him campaign chairman back in the summer of 2016. It didn't last very long because I think people realized how it could hurt you, Mr. Trump, if
this guy could end up going to jail.
But as you said before, Mike, I think it was you, he never thought he was going to win in the first place.
Yeah. Well, we were talking earlier that Trump had planned to launch a TV network, the Trump Network. This is widely speculated after he lost the election in 2016, and he would claim fraud and then launch it and take Bill O'Reilly and Hannity and those guys and start it up. Roger Ailes was still alive then, and he was ready to go. But then everything got all messed up because he won.
Yes, and if you go back to the summer of 2016 and you look at what Donald Trump's campaign organization was, compare that to a campaign organization of a congressional candidate like Antonio Delgado. Antonio Delgado had a much better run organization, much better run campaign than Trump had at that time. There really wasn't a campaign. It was he and his kids, and you know they were putting some Facebook ads up. It was not a campaign organization like we all think of one with regards to campaigns for Congress and Senate and the president.
I keep trying to point out to all of you that Donald Trump is the president of the United States, and somehow he got there. You know, you can call him dumb, you can call him anything you want, you can say all the mistakes, all the disloyalty, all of that's true, but he's president of the United States. How did he get there?
Yeah, I'm anxious to see what happens when Mueller's team goes to court to ask the judge to suspend this or to sentence Manafort, because he's going to show a little bit of his hand, and we're going to see how much of a collusion case he actually has against the administration, if he has anything at all.
Well, don't we expect to see that soon anyway? I mean, there's a lot of speculation that it was pretty much ready. There's reports that Trump's people are already preparing the response to it. There was a story today that the lawyer, I can't think of his name, the Harvard lawyer who always defends Trump.
Dershowitz.
Right. Thank you.
I know.
Alan's buddy. Alan Dershowitz. Anyway, the Dershowitz is predicting that it's going to be very, very heavy, but it's not going to be criminal. It's not going to prove criminality on the part of the Trump campaign, and therefore Trump will survive it. And about a year from now, it'll be a thing of the past.
That's a typical Dershowitz remark when you think about it.
Sure.
I mean, the guy's despicable. When you think of it, what he's really trying to say here is I've been doing all of this Trump pushing all along, and now I have to do something to reestablish my credibility, so I'm going to come on and say this is going to be very bad for him politically. Uh-huh. Well, you bet it's going to be bad for him politically, but it's not going to be criminal. Come on, Dershowitz, clean up your act.
Well, I'm still concerned that report's going to be suppressed and we'll never see it. I mean, I think we will see it, but it will initially be suppressed.
I bet there'll be another copy. Two copies. One will go to the Washington Post.
It'll be that one in the room.
One will be the one who goes to the New York Times.
It'll be the same deal as Kavanaugh. It'll be the one in the room, the one copy, and then you can only see it for 5 minutes.
No notes.
With no notes under the cloak of darkness. Well, leave your phone at the door.
Or it could be like, remember the Senate Watergate Committee report, which was published as a book, and you could buy it in bookstores.
Yeah.
You know?
Well, that's what I want. Yeah.
Well, the only thing is that Mueller, of course, has demonstrated to all of us that he is a guy who follows the rules. Mm-hmm. And if the rules are nobody gets it, then I have a feeling nobody's going to get it.
When you look at this Manafort deal, you do have to, or when I say this Manafort breach, you do have to wonder then what the next step is because things are starting to fall in place, right? We have Papadopoulos, we have, and next step will be maybe a report, right? Coming soon, I assume at the beginning of the year, we expect, yes?
Speculation says that, Joe.
Well, everybody was expecting it to come out after the midterms, and it seems like if it doesn't happen in the next 14 days, then it will not happen before the end of the year. So I think it's hard to know when it's going to come.
And we were all bracing for indictments against some members of the Trump family. We've not seen that yet either. A long way of saying we have no idea. There's no knowing what, which says a lot about the investigation itself, doesn't it?
Yeah. Well, I'll second that, Joe.
Yeah, Mueller surprised us before with indictments that we didn't even think were coming. So right. I think.
And those are the fun days.
Yeah, so, wow.
Well, it's a bonus.
Well, you mentioned Papadopoulos. That is so interesting that he's fighting, you know, really hard to stay out of jail for a week.
2 weeks. I think it's 2 weeks, isn't it?
A whole 2 weeks. Well, time off for good behavior.
Oh, you're right. You're right. Well, you know, I listened to a judge at one point say, "Don't ever go to jail. If the choice is between paying a fine and going to jail, pay the fine."
Because I've always
going to
believed
jail
that.
Is a very demeaning experience that no one should really go to unless they really deserve.
I've always believed that from the time I was a young child playing Monopoly, I'd do anything to stay out of jail.
Right. So don't commit a crime, or land on that space,
or lie to the Mueller team,
or lie to the Mueller team. Right. All right, let's take a break. When we continue, we'll be back, and we'll talk more after this short break. Philosophical existential questions that we ask ourselves: how many journalists does it take to log into a cell phone? So far, we're up to 3. Good morning. Welcome back to the Roundtable. It's the 27th of November, and we are thrilled to have you all with us. J.P. Miller is here, Mike Spain, Judy Patrick, and Alan Chartok. We welcome your letters. Alan has a couple. We'll start there, and we'll move on after that.
Okay, boss. James says, Manafort panel. The Manafort lying accusations by Mueller were perhaps a plan by his lawyers to set up a justification for Trump to pardon him, while at the same time destroying his credibility as a witness. Orange Hair can now say that Manafort is getting a bum deal from Mueller, and that's from Jim in Montgomery.
Huh.
All right.
Interesting reasoning.
Oh, it's possible.
It's as likely as any other scenario that we've discussed this morning.
On to the next one.
Yeah.
Okay, this is from Kathleen, who says...
go wherever you want.
This is Kathleen says on Manafort. Panel, please, considering what Trump has said about Manafort having to stay loyal, maybe he lied to win Trump back after he agreed to the plea deal. And that's from Kathleen, otherwise known as a double, triple, quadruple fake out. Anybody want to comment on that? I want to give you an opportunity. All right, and then Becky wrote, Manafort scared for his family? I haven't heard anyone bring up this possibility, but maybe Manafort's family has been threatened if he doesn't keep quiet. Just a thought. Love you all. Becky from Brimfield.
That's very nice.
You know, early on there was some speculation that he was doing things to protect his family. You're not hearing that much very much anymore. And I wonder how much of his vast fortune he gets to keep. Or his family gets to keep.
Every time they take a Democratic state senator to jail, or even a Republican, one wonders, weren't they considering the possibility this might go wrong and affect their family?
But in the case of these state legislatures, at least they all get to keep their pensions.
You make a very valid
great point.
Very valid point. And, okay, we did that. Becky's a very good letter. Okay, and now we're going to hear from Nina, who says to the panel, good morning, panel.
Good morning, Nina.
Manafort had no choice but to lie. Is that thing fixed?
Yeah, you're okay. Ready to go.
Okay. Good morning, panel. Manafort had no choice but to lie or be poisoned by Putin. I believe he knows this to the core of his being. I agree with the BBC commentators. Skripal was a warning.
All right, Mike, do you think that's as likely as any of the other scenarios we've talked about?
That Vladimir Putin could get to Paul Manafort inside a federal penitentiary in the United States? It's unlikely. I think that's less likely, but it's a fascinating topic that could be a great novel.
Well, just listen to the next one from Alan. It says, good morning, panel. Manafort has no choice but to lie or to be poisoned by the crown prince of Saudi Arabia. Okay, I made that one up.
Well, that one's pretty good.
I put that above the Putin.
Slightly.
Okay, and here we go. Manafort says, Kenneth, Paul Manafort has been playing a game to waste time and draw out the investigation. Trump will use it as ammunition to state that Mueller investigation is out of control and unbounded. The base will parrot this. Trump will pardon Manafort. End of story, says Ken, who is in the Department of Chemistry at Amherst College. Thought I mentioned that. His credentials are impressive.
All right. Is that it?
Unfortunately, that's it. That's why I was reading slowly.
Oh, that's all right. No, well, we have plenty of content. Don't worry about that. All right. Let's move on to other topics and talk about other stuff. We will go to the GM story, which was a big story as well. Actually, before we leave Mueller, there's a story in the Washington Post that Trump attacks looming Mueller report after an ally predicts that it will be devastating. This is the Alan Dershowitz story. President Trump on Monday launched what some interpreted as a preemptive PR attack against Special Counsel Mueller's final report a day after one of Mueller's most prominent critics says he expects the investigation's conclusions to be politically devastating to the president. Alan Dershowitz, an emeritus professor at Harvard Law School, has spent much of the past year arguing that Mueller's search for criminal activity in Trump's 2016 is so aggressive that it endangers democracy, as his book on the subject is titled. Speaking to George Stephanopoulos on ABC's This Week on Sunday, Dershowitz maintained his long-held view that the president is immune from the potential crimes Mueller is focused on. He said the special counsel's report due imminently, per CNN, will pose little legal threat to Trump. Politically, though, it is another matter. I think the report is going to be devastating to the president, and I know that the president's team is already working on a response to the report. Dershowitz said after Stephanopoulos reminded him that several of Trump's former aides have cut plea deals and are cooperating with Mueller. When I say devastating, I mean it's going to paint a picture that's going to be politically very devastating, Dershowitz continued. I still don't think it's going to make a criminal case because collusion is not criminal. Then the president launched back and said that when Mueller does his final report, will he be covering all of his conflicts of interest in the preamble? Will he be recommending action on all of the crimes of many kinds from those on the other side? Whatever happened to Podesta? And will he be putting in statements from, and then I don't have the other part of that. It was a two-part tweet, and I only have the first part. But I think you get the idea.
Yeah, I mean, I think that he's just setting the table, the president is, for whatever it is that comes so that he can dispute it and dismiss it. And I think it's true. I mean, don't you guys agree? I think it's true that if he has a explanation that whatever the explanation is, that he discredits it or he interprets it as describes it as a political attack or whatever, or has some kind of excuse, that there's going to be a segment of people who are going to buy that automatically.
38%.
Yeah. So it may not do a lot to change the base. It may convince people who are on the fence. I don't know how many are on the fence right now, but it seems like there are some, and it may cause him some political difficulties. But I'm thinking unless there's a criminal indictment contained in the Mueller report de facto, I mean the evidence that would amount to a criminal indictment of the president.
Or even an unindicted co-conspirator.
Sure. I mean, if he's an unindicted co-conspirator and others are indicted, that's the only thing that's going to really be a problem for him.
The phony witch hunt continues, but Mueller and his gang of angry Dems are only looking at one side, not the other. Wait until it comes out how horribly and viciously they are treating people, ruining lives for them, refusing to lie. Mueller is a conflicted prosecutor gone rogue. The fake news media builds Mueller up as a saint when in actuality he is the exact opposite. He is doing tremendous, all caps, damage to our criminal justice system where he is only looking at one side and not the other. Heroes will come of this, and it won't be Mueller and his terrible gang of angry Democrats. Look at their past and look where they come from. The now $30 million witch hunt continues, and they've got nothing but ruined lives. Where is the server? Let these terrible people go back to the Clinton Foundation and Justice Department.
Well, let's remember.
Wow.
Let's remember, of
where
course.
Where is that server?
Wow.
Let's remember, of course, that Mueller is a Republican, right?
Not only is he a Republican. He after Princeton, he went to Vietnam. He enlisted, and he led a Marine group through the jungles of Vietnam in combat, and then came back and had a life of public service, including being the FBI director. And when President Obama wanted him to stay on as FBI director beyond his term, Congress voted 99-1 in a full bipartisan support of that and kept him on longer than his term. I mean, this guy is a Republican, he's a patriot, he's a bipartisan, nonpartisan. And, you know, it's very difficult to paint him as a partisan the way the president is.
Yeah, but it doesn't matter. I think diehard Trump supporters, no matter what that report says, and I doubt they'll read it, will be behind him. And, in fact, I think it might even make them rise up to support him even more if it comes out and it is very directly attacks the president. I don't think what is going to be in the Mueller report matters much one way or the other now.
You know, I looked at the crowd yesterday when Trump was talking to them.
In Tupelo, Mississippi?
Yeah, in Tupelo. And I was looking at their faces, and it wasn't the same joie de vivre that I have seen in the past. Now, maybe that's because that's what I wanted to see, but I don't think so.
You think the enthusiasm was waned a little bit?
I do. Yeah. And remember that the ones who you see are the ones that they put behind him.
Did you hear that he said that people thought he looked like Elvis when he was young?
Yeah. There's a big story about that.
Aside from the blonde hair? He looked a little bit like Elvis, he thinks.
Well, it's very upsetting to Roselle, my wife, because she's just completed a book on Elvis.
Well, I just want to say Elvis was a friend of mine. Donald Trump is no Elvis Presley.
But he just gave the Congressional Medal of Honor to Elvis, right?
Right before the Mississippi runoff.
Let's talk about that runoff when we come back. There's a lot going on, but the folks are going to the polls. We'll talk about GM as well. Let's take a break. We'll be right back. Good morning, and welcome back to the Roundtable. Alan Chartok, Judy Patrick, Mike Spain, J.P. Miller, and... No?
Oh, no, okay. Yeah, sure. Sure. If that's what you want.
No, sure. I just... Sure. You've seen them, and I haven't, so I don't know.
Sure, go ahead.
All right.
All right, here we go.
We have letters, apparently.
Oh, me too. Richard says, Sneaky Mueller. Just read an interesting story in the Washington Post pointing out the possibility that Mueller might use the Manafort sentencing hearing to release information that would give Trump's team indigestion. Just an interesting possibility. And that's Richard in Corinth. Judy, you're nodding your head vigorously.
That's exactly one of the theories out there now, because it is something that can't be suppressed by the acting attorney general.
Okay. And then Jamie writes, I thought we... meaning all civilized nations, agreed that genocide through starvation would not happen again. We reached that agreement right after we agreed that war through rape and genocide by murder were off the table. We argue esoteric political issues as if they were a matter of life and death. The stories always lead the news, so they must be the most important, right? However, we all know this is not true. When will we accept that every starving child is on our front lawn? When will we really get our priorities straight? When will the news management step away from the expedient story and find the competing ones that are reported but not aired? So much for Giving Day. So much for Giving Day. Well, I don't like that letter.
Oh, it breaks my heart whenever I read the stories about the starving children who are being abused. And it's happening all over the world, and it's something that the UNICEF Children's Fund works really hard to address. And they have their emails I received today, and something that people should consider doing. But these stories are in the newspaper, and they are covered on NPR. And I encourage the audience to click on those stories, listen to those stories, and pay attention to them. It's partly news coverage is driven by audience interest. Let's not forget that.
Good point.
All right, let's move on to some other stories. We'll go to the – I do want to touch on the GM story. GM announced yesterday that they are going to cut thousands of jobs. This is due to slow sales. They plan to idle 5 factories in North America and cut roughly 14,000 jobs in a bid to trim costs. It was a jarring reflection of the auto industry's adjustment to changing customer tastes and sluggish sales. The move, which follows job reductions by Ford Motor Company, further pairs the workforce in a sector that President Trump had promised to bolster. Referring to GM's chief executive, Mary Barra, he told reporters, "I spoke to her and I stressed the fact that I am not happy with what she did." Mr. Trump also invoked the rescue of GM after its bankruptcy filing almost a decade ago. "You know, the U.S. saved General Motors," he told reporters, "and for her to take the company out of Ohio is not good. I think she's going to put something back in soon." I don't know what that means.
You know, the "I'm not happy with her" sounds like a mother or father talking to a 3-year-old, doesn't it? I'm not happy
There's
with you.
There's an element of condescension there.
Yes.
Yeah. As if making President Trump happy is what this chairman of General Motors really cares about. What they care about is their future. And the troubling aspect of that story for me was, I mean, I do understand Ford already did it. There's a lot of car companies that are no longer going to make sedans because there's not a profit in them. Ford will make the Mustang, and that's about it. And now General Motors is going to sell pickup trucks and crossover vehicles. Those are the most popular. But the other part of it was that they are gearing up for what they expect to be a recession. And that is bad news. And it comes as the stock market has kind of been a little volatile lately, perhaps just making a necessary correction because it does do that from time to time. But it is worrisome. And I hope that it's not a bellwether of what's before us.
I saw this story. I think it's hard to overestimate how devastating that this news story is for Trump's reelection chances. Ohio and Michigan are two states that he won. Ohio, he won by 8 points. And this is not 1,000 jobs. This is not 2,000 jobs. This is not 5,000 jobs. This is 14,000 jobs and hundreds of thousands of family members and friends and people in those communities that are affected by this. These people at these factories are Trump voters. They believed this guy's going to come in and this guy's going to save our jobs. He's going to bring back more factory jobs. And so I think on the Mueller thing, people are kind of in their camps as to whether it's important or not. This is something that actually moves voters. This is the economy. This is what Trump ran on. And this is, I think, really, really devastating news for him, much more so than almost anything else I can think of so far in his presidency.
You know, GM's not talking about, at least directly, whether or not the tariffs had an impact on this, but it had to have had an impact. The higher cost of steel and aluminum that they import, and even the parts they import to make these cars, had to have an impact. I think all these chickens are going to come home to roost eventually. Even when people start to do their tax returns in January and February, they're going to understand how much that tax cut that they got, what it really means to them. And here in New York State, we're going to figure out how much that loss of our being able to deduct all our property taxes is going to mean to us, even though New York State apparently is not important in electoral politics at the presidential level.
Well, he did mention when he called her, and then he mentioned when he recounted the conversation, he kept talking about Ohio. He knows exactly what's up here. This is
ground zero for him. And he does these tweets on black unemployment is an all-time low. Latinos on unemployment is an all-time low. The stock market is at an all-time high. He knows how important the economy is for being reelected. When you're the president of the United States, the economy is it in terms of getting reelected. It's very much a referendum on the economy. And Ohio is it. This is this is devastating news for him.
Yeah, well, what was the slogan during the Clinton first campaign back in 1992?
Well, it's the economy, stupid.
Right. All they had to do was focus on the economy, and that got him to unseat George Herbert Walker Bush. Bill Clinton, that is.
All right, let's go to the letters.
Okay. Lillian, who's been writing us every day, says, MS vote, Mississippi vote. I'm about to leave to go cast my vote for Mr. Espy. She now lives in Mississippi, but she listens every day to
Very
the round
cool.
table. Okay. But I had to get my round table in first, my daily dose of home. Mississippi has a lot of work to do, but a great step would be not electing Cindy Hyde-Smith into office. She's a disgrace. We shall see whether all the other Mississippians agree with you.
I mean, the thing about that race is that the last, I mean, we have the numbers from just 2 weeks ago, and it was really, really, really close. And you wonder if the last 2 weeks have done any fundamental damage to even those who supported her just a couple of,
Could
of
be.
Weeks ago.
I happen to think that the black turnout in this election is going to be decisive. And if you've got 40% of the population that is black, and that if 10%, 5% of that group who had not traditionally voted, he'd win.
We've also seen, though, that I think the biggest driver for Republican turnout right now is illegal immigration. That
right.
is what drives turnout on the Republican side. And having the situation at the border now where we see what's mm-hmm. happening with the clashes between the migrants
sure.
and the Border Patrol, I think that helps Republican turnout in
sure.
what should be a Republican state, Mississippi.
Anybody here think that he's going to win? Is there anybody around the table who thinks that Espy will win?
Well, only going by the polls, I think it's going to be a surprise if he wins. It'll certainly be an upset.
So that's a no.
But
you know,
upsets
I'll take the
happen.
Long shot just for fun.
Sure.
Well, is that
Are
based
we
on
quarters
your
quarters in the table? Or what?
Is that based? Is that based on your your personal preference, or is it based on your analytical abilities for all those years editor?
I'm no political paper? Pundit, but it has gotten a lot of attention, and the remarks that Cindy Hyde-Smith made were outrageous, and maybe that will inspire people to get out and vote.
Especially to your point, Alan, if you want to get the African American population of Mississippi out to vote. I mean, I think just the deplorable things that she has said over the last 2 weeks and her unwillingness to give any meaningful regret or denial is I think damaging. And I would take it too. I think he can. I think he'll.
He'll what?
I think he'll win.
It'll be fascinating. Regardless, because if after saying that she continues to support segregated schools and just blatantly sort of a return to the pre-civil rights era and the rules that governed back then, if that does not knock her out, what does that say about where we are as a society?
But she's playing to the same base that Trump is playing to.
Well, yeah, she's trying to win in Mississippi. She thinks that helps her.
That's right.
Right, but I mean, even
so, does it?
I expect her to probably win, but I guess I'm hoping for an upset.
I think we're all in that camp, but that's not well. And James says,
and I know this doesn't count, but
sure.
she seems like just a truly despicable individual. I mean, doesn't she? I mean, she's just—I don't. And I know if we threw out all the truly despicable individuals in the Senate, I don't know how many we'd have left. But it just—I don't know. It just—oh my goodness! You see her, and the other and her opponent, who certainly has baggage, certainly has issues, but also has been able to, I think. Communicate a much more positive message for the people of Mississippi. Although, with that said, I'm always a little hesitant to have outsiders talk about what's best for the people of Mississippi. I don't know. I don't live in Mississippi.
But if a candidate saying that they wouldn't mind going to a hanging doesn't motivate people to go to the polls, what will?
Well, that's right. I mean,
wait. But there are people on the other side who may want to go because of. because she said that it's disgusting, it's awful, it's immoral. But the fact of the matter is, she's banking on the fact that a lot of people took out their Civil War hats fore and aft and put them on and are nodding their heads and say, "You go, Cindy." That's what's disgusting about this.
Yeah, and they have the vote too.
Yeah. Okay, so I'm reading on. We heard from Jim in Binghamton. Today marks the 40th anniversary of the assassination of San Francisco Mayor George Moscone and Supervisor Harvey Milk, a SUNY Albany grad.
That's right. Albany grad, right, Harvey Milk.
Yeah. He famously fought at the forefront of the gay rights movement, leading to a change in attitudes of many in our country. In this month's midterms, Colorado elected the nation's first openly gay governor. The country, unfortunately, still has a long way to go, as exhibited by Donald Trump's reprehensible base. Remembering what our country was like in the 1970s, we should all be proud of the effort of Harvey Milk and the entire LGBTQ community. There were a lot of things going on in the 1970s that weren't all that healthy, including the election of Richard Nixon, right? The re-election of Richard Nixon, when everybody knew all about Watergate. So the 70s weren't this nirvana time, I don't think. I remember them well.
There were tumultuous times that came right after the awfulness of, 1968, where Martin Luther King was murdered and Bobby Kennedy was murdered, and we were in the midst of an awful war in South Vietnam. I mean, it was a terrible time, and we did come out of it, and we did get better afterwards. So all you can do is, if you're discouraged by the way things are going right now, is realize that you can come out of these.
Yeah, I do remember covering, I got hired by ABC to help out down at the 72 convention in Miami. And boy, I remember what tear gas smells like. It's really quite something.
And wasn't that the year both conventions were in the same venue?
I think that you may be right, although my memory is not.
A couple of weeks apart.
Yeah.
All right.
You don't want the rest of them?
No, because Ray's about to put a fork in his neck, and I want to prevent that from happening. So
it's a big neck.
We'll be.
He's done.
He's done. Right.
We'll be back right after this. Good morning. Welcome back to the roundtable and to our panel discussion. And just a reminder, today is Giving Tuesday. You have Black Friday and you have Cyber Monday, and that's all about getting stuff for other people. But Giving Tuesday is giving to causes that you feel strongly about and things that you want to help with. And we are among many, many organizations who are asking you to give today. And we would just like to be on the list, right, Alan?
That's exactly right, Joe. You know, it isn't a matter of giving to the American Cancer Society or WAMC. You can give to a lot of things.
Or UNICEF.
Yeah, sure, or UNICEF. Very good point, Judy.
And remember, you have to make those contributions this month before the end of the year if you want to deduct them on your taxes next year.
Absolutely. And we will, of course, be talking to people about reminding them of that as time goes forward. It's always actually a very important time for WAMC in terms of donations. A lot of people give you money on the basis of, I'd rather give it to you than, to support the war effort.
Well, and also we should note that all of that money goes into the lockbox for next fund drive, and it always gives us a big boost. So while we're not thinking about the February drive quite yet, we will.
Is that when it is February? Oh boy!
Yeah.
Oh boy!
Yeah, but certainly this is a nice day to think about that and the good things that you can do, and for us to thank you for all you do, and to say if you have a list and you are giving to your favorite groups, that perhaps we can be one of them. All you have to do is go to our website, wamc.org, wamc.org.
Or stick a check in the mail and send it to WAMC at 318 Central Avenue, Albany, New York, 12206. You know, that's the old way. That's the old way. Remember when people would put checks in envelopes and send them through the mail at 318 Central Avenue, Albany, New York, 12206?
Well, it's one of the reasons why the Postal Service is suffering, because not as many people are using first-class mail to pay bills and to make donations and communicate back and forth, because you can all do it online now. But that's another story.
Yeah. Do you do it at your house, Mike?
Pardon me?
Do you ever pay a bill by check?
There's very rare cases when I've tried every other way to pay it, and I'll pay it by check.
Yeah. We do it at the Short Talk House.
Yeah. It's school taxes in Schenectady. You can pay by credit card, but they charge you a big fee, you know, that the bank gets. So it's cheaper to write an actual physical check and drop it in the mail.
Kelly got mad at me yesterday because I wrote a check. I may have written a check. This, I think, was probably the second check I've written in 5 years.
Yeah.
And I wrote it, but what didn't I do?
You didn't put it in the register.
I didn't put it in the register. Oh, my God. Yeah. It was the end of life as we know it. So, yeah, I do everything online. Anyway, regardless of how you do it, we would love for you to help us. It's Giving Tuesday, WAMC.org or 318 Central Avenue.
And you can do it without a stamp, right?
That's right. Exactly. All right. We have a couple letters. We'll go to those.
Here we go. C. Eric wrote, perhaps GM is working a deal for Fed help by making this announcement so Trump can be seen as a savior when he proposes help. And that's about GM jobs. All right.
He did predict that. I think she'll be, we'll be bringing some back. She'll be putting some things back or something.
Well, I don't know what that means, though.
That he has to give them something to chew on, saying, well, look, I called her up and I yelled at her, and also I'm pretty sure they'll be bringing something back. He has no idea what they'll be bringing back, but he says it.
Well, and he can threaten punitive measures if they follow through with it, I think.
Well, you remember Kennedy back in the day when the steel behemoths started up. Kennedy called them in and jawboned them, and it worked.
I mean, buried in the reporting on this yesterday was the fact that they are negotiating with United Auto Workers for a new contract, which has yet to be resolved. So that is an issue.
Yeah. Well, what's interesting is that apparently the United Auto Workers and GM have doped this all out together. So that's one of the things that's happening here. Any antipathy towards the deal is probably outside what the United Auto Workers are doing. You're all looking
at
me strangely.
Are you suggesting collusion on the part of the leadership of
discussion.
The...
We'll do this if you do this. Mm. We'll give you this.
So they already know what they're going to get, and this was just the public show.
And Austin in Schenectady says, good morning, panel. You all scoffed at the idea of Vladimir Putin getting to Massachusetts. You all scoffed
Manafort.
Right? Manafort, yeah, okay.
Well, maybe he'll be in a federal penitentiary in Massachusetts.
All scoffed at the idea of Vladimir Putin getting to Manafort in a federal penitentiary. Look at just what happened to Whitey Bulger. Most likely a mob hit in retribution for his role as an FBI informant for all those years. I do believe that anyone could be hit in any U.S. prison if the right people want it done. In this case, the dots are pretty easy to connect. Putin equals Russian mobsters equals American mobsters equals the federal prison system, and I'm sure there are other possibilities. I don't know how likely it is that Putin would want Manafort dead. I'm just saying if he does, he certainly, in capital letters, could make it happen, and that's Austin.
Good point.
Yeah, what a world we live in.
John says, if the power of organized labor had not been so systematically dismantled by politicians, worker apathy and the unions' own missteps and corruption, it's hard to see how else this unilateral action could be taken without any consultation with those most affected, the labor force itself. I just addressed that. All right, and over to Roger, who says, global warming. Despite the urgency of reining in the many dictatorial, unconstitutional, science-denying, and autocratic tendencies of President Trump, Congress needs to address the issue of climate change. We are woefully ill-prepared for the nearly inevitable consequences of ignoring science, which Trump policies and actions have chosen to ignore, if not repudiate. Inaction by Congress on this vital issue is reprehensible. When the economy and ecology slash environment collapse simultaneously, what I call eco-lapse. Nothing else will matter. Future generations will curse the current generations. Inaction on this issue despite decades of warning. You know, I said something this morning on the air, which I'm still thinking about. It's one thing for Donald Trump to ignore, global warming and climate change because, you know, it's so incredibly important to Mike's grandchildren, my grandchildren, who are all going to be growing up. But he has grandchildren. Don't you see what I'm saying here? Does he have any regard for them?
Well, it's important to recognize that when the changes in society happen, those with wealth will be better off. And that's probably why he's less motivated. It's not his children who will suffer.
Right. The droughts, the famine are going to happen in third world countries. And in North America, we're going to be able to still produce our – it's going to be we're going to be isolated, far more isolated, and we will be able to enjoy a life at least for a while. But it's the third world countries that are really going to suffer. And we as a nation have to figure out whether we care about them as well.
Joseph from writes on the question of money. The figure of $30 million was mentioned in a quote from Mr. Trump as the cost of the Mueller investigation. Yesterday, when someone asked how many troops are on the southern border, the answer is $72 million worth of troops so far as of last week. What a waste of money. Mueller investigation is surely worth the money, while the border expense is a travesty. And then we heard from Greg, who said, filling the swamp. The fake news is coming out of the White House and places like Fox Conspiracy Theory Entertainment. Trump filled the swamp, and the Honorable Mr. Mueller has proven the fact. And that's from Greg in Cooperstown. That's all I got, Joe.
All right, let's go back to some other topics and talk about what else is making news. We go to... I think it's been a while since we've actually done a good story, so like a good news story. So, hey, why not today? The FDA approves a precision medicine drug for different cancers with same mutation. The action is called a milestone, but certainly challenges do remain. The Food and Drug Administration on Monday, according to the Washington Post, approved a drug for a wide range of cancers based on a shared mutation rather than the tumor's location. An advance for the sometimes controversial field of precision medicine. The medication, which is called Vitrakvi?
Vitrakvi, I think.
Vitrakvi. Yeah. It's the second treatment to receive FDA clearance based on a common biomarker found in an array of cancers. The drug also was approved simultaneously for adults and children. Typically, oncology drugs are considered much later for children. Last year, the agency for the first time approved an immunotherapy drug for tumors with a specific genetic signature, regardless of where they originated in the body, but that treatment had been cleared for several cancers, including advanced melanoma. The drug approval Monday is for patients with advanced solid tumors containing what they call an NTRK gene fusion, a hybrid of two genes that can promote uncontrolled cell growth. And again, the good news here, of course, is a milestone because it is for different cancers. And that is...
The difficulty, of course, is that it will be really expensive. It'll cost $32,800 a day for a 30-day supply, rather. So more than $30,000 for a month. But it is a breakthrough, and usually that signals... eventual, more drugs like it using the same technology, and then there will be some competition, hopefully, that will bring the price down.
Yeah, this precision medicine approach is something new to me. I hadn't realized that this was happening out there, but they talk about this will be more and more how doctors and researchers are going to approach combating medicines, especially cancers. But it is very, very expensive. Medicare apparently will cover this. The question of whether or not private insurers will cover it is still up in the air. But the company says that they will do what is needed to make sure very poor people get access to this medicine if they don't have the insurance they need.
It is, but any news that you hear that is helping to fight cancer is good news.
I completely agree. I they're portraying this as you know, like turning a corner, you know, actually having a drug on the market that does what has been experimental up to now. And that's really hopeful.
And there are cases in which, you know, where people have actually survived cancers using this drug. I mean, there's a story, one of the stories we read this morning talked about a 14-year-old girl who was alive and dreaming of going to college because she survived her very devastating cancers because of this drug. So it is already saving lives.
Alan, anything? No? Okay, good. Okay.
I'm fine.
All right.
Thank you for asking.
No, I just wanted to check before I moved on.
I'm typically quiet.
You know, it's happy news. He has nothing to say.
actually, you know, this is terrific.
It is.
I mean, this is really terrific, as only a hypochondriac can say.
A card-carrying hypochondriac can say, right?
In our 2 minutes left, let's ringleader of a group of rebellious Democrats pushing to deny Nancy Pelosi the Speaker's gavel in the new Congress appeared to soften his opposition on Monday, calling for negotiations and the clearest signal to date that Ms. Pelosi's detractors have failed to thwart her steady march to the top post. Seth Moulton of Massachusetts, who helped spearhead a letter last week in which 16 Democrats said it was time for Ms. Pelosi to stand aside, said that his effort was bigger than her as Democratic aides aligned with him, said that some of the defectors were searching for a deal that would ultimately allow them to vote for her. Leader Pelosi wants to boil this down to a personal argument, but this is so much bigger than her, according to Mr. Moulton in a statement. It's about the entire stagnant three-person leadership team and having a serious conversation about promoting leaders who reflect the future of our caucus. His change in tone has reflected the success of Ms. Pelosi's efforts to grind down her opponents through a mix of deft deal-making and quiet campaigning, which has already prompted public reversals from two Democrats and led a third to suggest that he might ultimately vote for her.
Well, a couple of things here. Number one, we have in Massachusetts an incredible situation where Richie Neal, who is our congressman, a wonderful congressman, is going to be the chair of Ways and Means because he's been around for a long time and, you know, relatively long time. We have right next door a firebrand guy. There's no more liberal guy in the United States Congress than Jim McGovern. And he's going to be the head of the Rules Committee. Now, one of the things that some of these guys are asking for upon entering the Congress is we want to be chairs and we want to vote on who the committee chairs are. And I believe the Republicans, you know, knowing they're in bad shape, have now announced that they're going to do that. You know, they're going to start opening up some of the committee chairs to voting for who they're going to be. We have that in the university where we vote for the chairman in the academic department and the unlucky ones, and the unlucky ones win.
Well, let me ask you this, Alan, the political scientist in the room. If there truly is a change in roles that shares the power of the speaker's seat, in a way, people like Seth Moulton have won something here that was not there before. Would that be true?
True.
True. Okay. He's from the Boston area, Salem, I think.
He's right out there. He's down there in the eastern part of the state. We don't recognize
him. He's not part of your area.
We don't recognize him.
We don't recognize him.
There you go.
Eastern Massachusetts.
We don't recognize you. All right. We are out of time. My thanks to everybody for participating this morning. JP Miller, Mike Spain, Judy Patrick, Alan Chartok. Thank you all. Enjoy this Giving Tuesday. You can still give. WAMC.org. We'll be back after this short break.